Senator Farrell was unavoidably detained in the House thanks to the honors given her by Representative Johnson. And today our legislative fiscal office is represented by Susie Jordan, and our committee assistant is Linda Schar. And we'll go ahead, let's see, we have a response to a question from, or a series of questions from Marcia. Who wants to represent the department? Flip the coin, whoever loses, Mike Marsh.
Mr. Chair, we have a couple of things. Mike Marsh from the department. We do have answers to questions from the discussion on Thursday. In addition, we have the commission chair here. I don't know if you'd like to have the answers from Friday, or I might be able to flow those better into my presentation. Maybe take the chair first so you can kind of get his overview, if that would be okay.
Be happy to do that. Welcome, Mr. Corey.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I could introduce Mr. Corey to you. Again, for the record, I'm Bruce Warner, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. It's a pleasure to introduce Stephen Corey, who currently chairs the Oregon Transportation Commission, and having served as a member of that commission since 1994. He's a partner with Corey, Blyer, Rue, Lawrenson, and Hojum, a law firm in Pendleton. I also understand his family has had a ranch there for all of his life. So he comes from a Pendleton area with lots of connections and again, history of the area. It's important to note that our chair has been heavily involved in the agency operations and development of the budget you have before you now. As well, he has been helping out the state on the Department of Administrative Services Audit Committee, and I think more importantly, he has served the state since 1983 on three state commissions. First, on the Oregon Trail Advisory Commission, where he was the chairman, and also the Oregon Tourist Commission, where he served as a chairman for, I think, 5 years. And now we're real pleased that he's now on the Oregon Transportation Commission as the chairman. So, again, it's my pleasure to introduce him to the committee members who don't know him.
Mr. Chair, he also serves on the Oregon Historical Society.
Thank you, Senator Colonel.
Yes, thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Steve Corey, and I do serve as chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. I actually have had the privilege, with just one exception, of meeting and knowing each of you. I want to start off by telling you that on behalf of the commission, the five members of the commission, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon and to answer any questions that you may have for me. The Transportation Commission itself is a five-member voluntary citizens board. By statute, the commission is directed to develop and maintain state transportation policy and to develop a comprehensive long-range plan for multimodal transportation. We also are charged with coordinating and administering the programs as they relate to rail, highway, motor vehicles, public transit, safety, and other transportation-related programs. And in our public meetings, which amount to 12 per year, we do our best to carry forth the charges that the legislature gives to us, and we take those charges seriously. I live in Pendleton. We have four other commission members, and I thought I'd mention that. We have Stuart Foster, who lives down in the Representative Patridge area from Medford, John Russell, who is from Portland, Gail Achterman, who is a brand new member of the commission, and she now spends time between Portland and Eugene and Bend, and Randy Pape, who's a brand new member, recently appointed, who is in Eugene, although most of us know he spends seemingly most of his time on the front page of the Argonian or in Bend at Bachelor. Our monthly meetings principally are held in Salem during the legislative session, but during the regular other 16 months or so per biennium, we meet every other month outside of the state, outside of Salem, and we do our best to go to each of the five regions, to visit each region each year, and we do our best when we go to the different regions to make sure that we go to a different city within that region each time that we visit that region. We have found, and I think other commissions would say the same thing, that that one of our tasks, albeit probably not in statute, is to be a good sounding board for the public and for counties and cities, and we haven't found a better method than this, which we think is a very effective method of holding meetings around the state where we can listen and hear and take tours while we're in those areas of particularly pressing projects in those particular cities or counties. I wanted to comment that that what we hear when we do that is nearly the same thing in every venue, and that is that there is a huge demand within every community and every county for more funding for every type and nature of transportation problem. In short, sufficient funding is not there and not here, nor do we view that there is any increase of any size at all on the horizon. The overwhelming defeat of ballot measure 82 last year is a hard matter to overcome for any of us, and we're not, as you know, before you or this legislative session asking for substantial changes in our budget, albeit that we know that the transportation needs are there. We have developed over the past 2 to 4 years what we think is a better method, albeit not with increased funding, but a better method of tying our decision making to localities and to counties, and that's to create what we call Area Commissions on Transportation, or ACTS. ACTS, I think we have either 9 or 10 in number at this point. ACTS meet on a regular basis, some more frequently than others, depending upon the areas, but they consist of local and county representatives and private members and tribal members and ODOT staff, and they now become a sounding board for the Transportation Commission on what projects we should be undertaking within any specific region. We found the creation and the use of the ACTS to be very helpful to us. Among other things, you're aware, and I understand I don't need to put a dollar in the pot for the term STIP, but the State Transportation Improvement Plan, which deals with the construction projects and public input, and which we're in the process of updating again right now, lends to the use of these ACTS, and we pick up comments as we go forward in prioritizing the STIP and prioritizing the project, and we found that to be a very effective effective way. I want to comment about the budget that you are in process of hearing. Go ahead.
Thank you. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I need help with the rules we established on Friday. I had a question that's going to require some research in regard to the STIP. Can you refresh the members on how you'd like that to progress?
I think that the question, as long as it's understood that it's for research, can probably be in conjunction with testimony at that time, as long as we don't expect a detailed answer at this particular time. So go ahead and follow up, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chairman. One issue I've always wondered is how the STIP relates with the county transportation plan that were required to put together, along with the city plan that was put together. To me, it always seemed like there should have been a thread that the city plan should connect with the county plan, and the county plan should connect with the state plan. And it should be out, if you would. At some point, could I have someone address that issue and tell me how those plans all come together? And then also, if you could throw in how the intermodal transportation plans come together, just how the plans all connect.
Representative Smith, we'll make sure we have someone address that here soon for you and tie in the transportation planning rule and its adoption by the cities and counties and how that relates to the STIP. And just to comment one item further on that, in your region, We're having the actual STIP hearings on this coming Thursday night. They're going to be done by EdNet. There'll be about 6 or 7 communities tied together by satellite. The headquarters is out of Eastern Oregon State College, but Ontario and all the regions within our Region 5 will simultaneously be making their comments Thursday night at 7.
Great. President Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of full disclosure, I have served since its inception as a member of the act that takes in Tillamook, Clatsop, and Columbia counties. And I have some questions about the act, as all I'm asking the director and or Mike is, will you be coming back to that in the more in-depth presentations and discuss how the acts are functioning later? Because I can easily hold my inquiry or take the questions at the end of the hearing.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Is David Bishop going to be with you, Mike? Are you going to present those?
We didn't plan on having Mr. Okay. Bishop here, but we could have an act like an area manager.
Please, so as to represent or to at least respond to Representative Johnson.
Mr. Bishop is riding high on the Portland Oregonian editorial and his work with the city of Woodburn and the school just in the last few days, so it'd do him well to come here and tell you about the acts. And he has actually gone from act to act in assisting us in getting them set up, so he would be a person I think that would be helpful for you to
Thank you.
Talk to. Let's see. I was going to comment about the budget, which is the main focus I recognize of this committee. I wanted to comment in this fashion that even though we have all these needs out there, and even though we're getting continued feedback from the ACTS about their desire for this project or that project, as a commission, we are realistic that the money is not there, and I wanted to assure all of you that the Transportation Commission itself has been actively involved in the formulation of the agency's budget this time around, and that we actually conducted 5 separate meetings, public meetings, on this budget as we had it built, including the adding of an extra meeting in June where we accommodated stakeholder groups that wanted to give us their thoughts on the priorities on the budget. And this particular budget request before you is a result of, I think, several notable developments during the biennium. First, ODOT reduced its 1999-01 budget by about $93.2 million. This adjustment was a result of changes in revenue forecasts, accelerated project delivery, and negotiated salary increases. And in response, in late 1999, ODOT also cut travel, maintenance, technology, and personnel costs by $40.6 million. And delayed but did not cut $36 million in transportation projects. Within this reduced budget, the Transportation Commission, after that, directed in July of 2000 that the agency shift $45.5 million from various programs in order to put more money into highway preservation and bridge projects. Probably all of you are familiar that we have moved towards a preservation mode, and we have done our best to reorient even a portion of our budget towards bridge, albeit there's not enough money to make the progress we'd like to see made on either of those fronts. We've received over probably the 6 years that I've been on this commission, and have each year or each legislative session reported to the legislature on the deteriorating conditions of our bridges, a very old system of bridges. We've had persons from Oregon State identify for us significant potential seismic problems with most of the bridges in the state, and have given us, in their scientific terms and in my layperson's terms, the probabilities of a major earthquake off the coast of Oregon at some point in the next 300 years, and have never been able to tell us, of course, whether that will occur tomorrow or 300 years away, but they have told us, and we have absorbed that with considerable fear, that we don't have a sustainable bridge system from a seismic retrofit standard right now, nor do we have sufficient funds to handle and take care of that. I wanted to comment, the commission directed the budget, directed the department to build a budget without a request for increased funding. This is different than what we've done before, and without a request for additional, I don't know if I better say full-time equivalents. I don't want to use the acronym because I don't know what's in the pig here. The budget request before you then reflects current service levels held to the 1999-2001 operating levels. There are no increases for cost of living or for inflation in our budget. A continuing flat budget means actual cuts in programs to account for growth and inflation. I wanted to just make a comment about a few things as we look ahead before I close. The first thing is that on an area of emergency repairs and maintenance, today's a beautiful day around Salem. The fact is that we've had a, comparatively speaking, mild winter, and we've been lucky so far in terms of mudslides, other things that we have encountered last year, for example. Just reminding you of Yahats, it was virtually cut off at this time of year last year from January to mid-April by a massive landslide that closed Highway 101. We even reoriented and had a meeting in Yahats of our full commission and staff because we wanted to emphasize that we were doing what we could to try to get that back on, but it was a moving slide of significant problem for the whole state and particularly for those communities. We've been blessed this year without that type of weather. I've commented already, but I was going to say a few words about the potential of seismic impacts. The Seattle experience, Seattle area experience, reawakens and probably reemphasizes the point I just made about seismic retrofitting and our belief as a commission we need to do that. And then I think just to give you a general comment, everything costs more, and while we seem to be in 6 weeks of potential recession, every time we turn around, our construction costs are going up, and the long and the short of it is that things today buy less than they would have bought last year or the previous years. The new bridge that's at the Crooked River on US 97 actually cost 10 times more to put in than the one that it replaced. And we see that, and I know you see it in your own businesses as, every day, but it's a fact that affects us at the Transportation Commission. Two other comments that I had. The first comment was that we have a new director. You've heard from Bruce last Thursday, I guess, and we're pleased to have him on board and working with us. And he takes the helm of an approximately 4,800 person staff that I can tell you is incredibly dedicated to the state. And we're on a good time in terms of ODOT and its receptability and acknowledgement by Oregon citizens. I think that even the Portland Oregonian article that I just referenced, mentioning David Bishop and the rapid deployment of an alternative in the city of Woodburn instance, I can tell you in 5 or 6, 7 years, we haven't really had a better time of being in the public eye in a complimentary sense, and I know Bruce will carry us on in that. Secondly, I received a call from Senator Wyden in Washington, D.C. on Friday afternoon, and the call really was that he had heard, because there had been a delegation from Metro and Gail Achterman from our commission had been back there earlier in the week, that we would be appearing before your committee. And he asked me if I would deliver one message, and that message is that he has not seen in his time in D.C. such collaboration between the congressional members as a whole, the House of Representatives and the senators from Oregon on transportation projects. And he said that his office and the office of Senator Smith are in a position working together that they can deliver more federal monies than they think they've ever been able to do before for all types of highway projects to Oregon. there is one catch, and that's why he called and why he asked me to mention this to you. He said the difficulty is that Oregon, at the legislative level and at your commission level, my commission level, needs to understand that these projects are like other projects. They come with a match. And you, Oregon, are out of match, so to speak. There's, depending upon whether it's a project, as I understand it, comes under budget, we may free up a little bit more match, but we are out of match because we haven't moved or had a pot that will become federal match. And he believes that they are handicapped if we don't have a way of meeting available federal monies with match. That was his message. I think it probably speaks for itself, and so I have delivered it. We look forward to working with you and having our staff work with you, and I'm available if you have questions, particularly about the commission or our things, and see if I can answer other ones. If they're tougher, I may refer them.
Thank you, Chair Corey. We do appreciate your being here today, and I recognize Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corey, first, thanks for serving on the commission. I know that it's a lot of work. I had a question in regard, especially being an attorney as well, regarding the Attorney General's, we're not calling it an opinion at this point in time, advisory. Has the commission gone back to look at the budget in light of those things? I know that there are fee bills that are being heard in other areas of this building, but some of the revenue that is generated from the gas tax as well as, you know, diesel fuel would be freed up potentially if we were to pass some of those fee bills. My question is there an add back list that the department's looking at? Is that where we should go to get some of the money for the pot of money you just talked about with Senator Wyden?
Representative Butler, Representative Patridge, actually the document I would look at that I was furnished as a commissioner, I don't know whether my staff, I'm sure they don't have it today, but we received from our department a sheet that you turn horizontally that takes the AG's opinion and items one by one and has about six columns in it, and it has on each of the points of the Attorney General's office, it has the fiscal impact to us. And as commissioners, we all looked at that. We discussed it at a public pre-hearing meeting in January or February, and as I understand, our staff, as we're examining how we go about the corrections that are needed, that we will be addressing each of those things. Is that something we've seen?
Yes. Mr. Chair, it would be okay if I added just a little bit on the commissioner's comments. President Patridge asked a question as it relates to changes in the budget. And I just want to make sure we're clear that although there are a lot of issues within the AG opinion that relates to continuation of the budget, the actual changes that are incorporated there are the same as what's in the agency or the governor's recommended budget, in that the fee bill brings in revenues, but it doesn't bring in significant revenues different than what we planned within the initial governor's recommended budget. Now, there are alternatives that are being discussed, which could come forward and adjust it. But on the basis of what exists now, all that we're trying to do is continue the legislative direction about what's in statute now, continue those programs forward with a slight change in statute to allow it to meet the constitutional requirements, with the exception of a couple places. And I want to make sure we're clear of those. I mentioned the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, which is one area where we would terminate a fee within the governor's recommended budget level or in the bills that are coming forward. It would eliminate that money from coming to through ODOT to the Department of Human Services. That's one example, and that's a significant amount of money. And depending on biennium, it's between $6.8 and $9 million. So that is significant. The other one was the Oregon Student Safety on the Move, which I mentioned on Thursday, which would terminate also, and that would be about $500,000. So those two things, if we terminated them, would be a loss. If we continued them and had them still continue to come into the ODOT budget, that would be an increase, and that would be something that ought to be discussed with the members as a policy decision. So that's perfectly appropriate for that kind of discussion.
That is recognized.
I'd be interested in getting more information, if possible, on what leverage is at stake in regards to the conversation you had with Senator Wyden and Senator Smith. and the timing and how those programs work out. So you'd hate to step over a nickel.
Good, and I think we could provide that. I believe with Jason Tell from our department, who's back in D.C. and does an excellent job, and with some work with Senator Wyden and Senator Smith's staffs, that we could come up with something that they might be able on their side to deliver, and what the deliverable means in terms of the state budget and the match.
If nothing else, it's good to see the opportunity cost that we're faced with as we purposes.
Representative Ringel is recognized.
Well, thank you. I completely agree with what Representative Smith just said, but I didn't follow the mechanism on getting that information. Chair Butler, is that something we can discuss at some point during the hearing, or what do you suggest?
I guess. Sitting in my position, I would think we would try to get that information and get it back to you, maybe even this week. I hate to push our staff too much, but I mean, I think what I would do would be to call Jason Tell and say, we've had this discussion. Senator Wyden helped initiate it Friday, and we take you at your word. What can you deliver? And what types of things, and what dollar amounts, and what types of match monies might be necessary? And then we could give you that report. Albeit that it's going to be a general discussion, it would seems like it would be helpful to you.
Okay, thank you.
I just wondered if perhaps Senator Wyden had said anything relative to the safety net monies that are coming to our schools, and 75% of that comes from roads as well. Did he say, make any comment?
Did not make any comment about that, but by the time he called, it was getting the Trailblazer game was starting.
So he had to monitor the amount that he could get in there before it started, huh? Troublemakers, how'd they do Friday?
I actually think this must have been Thursday night, as I think about it, because that's the night they got clobbered.
That's the night they lost them. So. Okay.
Maybe they need Representative Thompson's bill. The federal one.
Any additional comments or questions? Questions for Chair Corey while he's here? Again, we thank you very much for coming today, and thank you for your dedicated service to the state in many arenas.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate being here for our commission and look forward to working with all of you.
Thanks so much. Okay, we'll proceed then, Mike, with the questions and follow-up from last week.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Hopefully the members all have, or is being handed out, a sheet like this with a, I don't know my color as well as I should. I guess we'll call this orange.
Salmon. Pretty good. Salmon.
Just a quick hit on these, and then as the Chair mentioned, we'll be open to questions later on if the members would like more detailed discussion about the answers. We had several questions. The first was the size of the what are called technical adjustments within the budget. Those are listed in detail as Attachment A. It does total the $75 million. The bottom line to that discussion is that we had some significant changes in there that related to, in particular, the local street network and bonding program funding, as well as expenditures that relate to TriMet, and then some other smaller ones that deal with capital construction and other items. If there are questions on those, happy to hit those later. Y2K, the year 2000 phase out, we mentioned the fact that we're no longer working that in the 0103 budget. It was eliminated out as a technical adjustment. That's a little over $6 million. One page summary of the Oregon Department of Transportation performance measures, and Mr. Chair, I'll refer back to this a little later in my remarks as it flows through the summary, but it's on page 4 of this, and I'll come back and discuss that in a little bit more detail as it relates to the overview today.
Okay.
And then the others dealt with the description of bridge needs, and we have a long list of bridge needs that are in detail. Happy to go into those at some further point. And then vulnerability to proprietary software. We list the issue of how we look at contracting as it deals with all the elements of purchase, lease, contractor involvement, and involvement of internal staff with leases of software. And the bottom line is that we think we've greatly reduced the risk in that area. And last is House Bill 3292 coming out of the last session dealing with commercial driver license drug test reporting implementation. and I gave an update there that I summarized some extent with Senator Yee last Thursday, but this goes into more detail. And again, happy to hit that more maybe offline if the members would like. Mr. Chair, I can go into wrapping up. I did not finish the agency summary from last Thursday. Would like to try to briefly go through that because I know we're trying to get to at least one, if not two, divisions today. And I'll try to go through this as quickly as I can. A couple of points, as the members may recall, this is on page 5 of the overview if you'd like to follow along. There are several points within the format that I won't hit in detail now, and if the members have a question later, please let me know. Of the points I did want to hit, major budgetary issues, population growth is obviously a big one for us, and I guess I'll just leave one point to maybe help stick in your mind that makes it a little bit more human or puts a face on the growth issue. We're expecting the population of Oregon to go up 1.2% each year of this next biennium. If you think about that in terms of actual numbers of people, it's like adding the city of Albany to the state of Oregon each year in terms of number of people. So you think about the number of people coming through DMV, the number of people driving on the roads, that type of thing. It really gives us an idea of the amount of growth, even at 1.2% each year. Secondly, on economic variables, there are several pieces that are affecting us pretty immediately right here. Electronic commerce and internet businesses give a boost to customized shipping, and this results in shifting from shipments on rail to shipments on trucks to a significant extent. We're also interested in trying to strengthen, and we see a need for rural freight links, meaning rail and highway, needing improvement also. And I mentioned we don't have a dedicated fund source for those areas. In the revenue area, a quick comment there would be that the state gas tax that last took effect was in 1993. Since that time, inflation has eroded ODOT's purchasing power by about one penny per year, which is averaging between 3% and 4% in inflation. So that's about a penny per year that we lose over the period of time, and obviously reduces our buying power significantly.
It's one penny per gallon?
Correct, Mr. Chair. Okay. And the program and service level reductions, I won't be redundant from what Chair Corey already indicated, but we did go through reductions in the 1901 period and did shift the priority to bridge and pavement preservation. And that's what we're making sure happened within this governor's recommended budget. In addition, we've already addressed the fact that the amount of revenues available may end up limiting federal match. And we'll be working with the federal government, with our congressional delegation, to try to make sure we're doing everything we can to maximize how we use those match monies. On the aging infrastructure, a brief comment there would be that, like anything else, if you own a house that's 60 years old, that's a lot different maintenance than a house that's 10 years old. Much of the system was built before 1950, and we have to put a lot more money into maintaining the system when it is older as it is now. So it's a different case to say the cost of maintenance back in the 60s, 70s, or even 80s as compared to now. And we talked about bridges yesterday. I don't think I'll go much more into that except to emphasize what has already been mentioned today, that three-fourths of our bridges were built before 1975 when designs were available that helped resist earthquake damage. And so we need to make sure we're doing everything that we can to put in those seismic improvements to make it more safe in the future. Mr. Chair, I hit in the prior week the discussion of strategic direction, so I think I'll leave that for now and go to the performance measures discussion and come back to the brief the section that's on page 4 of your overview, just to make sure we're all emphasizing this, especially I know Senator Yee had some questions about this, and I wanted to make sure I took just a couple minutes to go through what's there. In the page dealing with benchmarks and performance measures that's in your document, the one that is in your the agency summary, it looks like this, and it starts with the benchmarks, goes to goals, and goes to outcomes here. From outcomes, you go down to the more detailed measures, which are the ones that are shown here, which show our performance measures as an agency in a format that we think is relatively easy to track, showing the measure.
Excuse me,
yes.
What page are you on?
In the very back section of the book, of the large book, the very last section.
The last section.
It's about a 1-inch thick piece back there. And page 8.
Page 8.
Correct. There you are. And what that shows are the benchmarks that relate to the agency, the goals and then the outcomes that we're seeking. What I'm showing you here in the answer to the questions from Thursday are some of those outcomes and some of the more detailed agency performance measures to give you an idea of where we are, number one, and number two, the types of things that we track. Obviously, these are not all the measures for the agency, but there are a few that give an idea of the magnitude that we're talking about. Just some examples to pull off of that would be looking at traffic fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. That's a target of 1.19 per million vehicle miles traveled. We've achieved that target in 1999, so we're within the goals that we have established there. The second one, percent of traffic fatalities that involved alcohol.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, with your future goals, can you list your future goals at least to the end of the biennium, like 01, 02, 03?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, we have a listing of the goals for all of our measures that each one of the divisions, when they come forward, can answer the question about what's next for the goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make sure that we remind them when they come forward to talk about the future as well as the past. In some cases, we're trying to make it as simple as it can be so we can emphasize either the past or the future. We try to show some history in this one. If you'd like to have us showing less history and more about what the future we expect to hold, we can do that. Most of these do have a target like the benchmarks. It says by 2010, we'd like to achieve a certain level, or by 2015. A couple others just to pull out would be the large truck commercial motor vehicle accident rates. And again, we're trying to show the rate of accident and per the amount of travel. 1,730 is the target. We have not achieved that in 1999. We're about 60 high. So our goal is to be able to go down this next year in 2001. Percent of children bicyclists who use a helmet, we achieved 49% in 1999, the last completed year. And the target for 2001 is 56%. So we're hoping to increase in that area. Public satisfaction with transportation safety, in 1989 it was 78%. The goal for 2001 is 80%. So as members can see, we've got goals set. Many of these are worked through significant amounts of public involvement in committees like the Driving Under the Influence of Intoxicants Committee that's been established. So citizens are involved in trying to set these targets in many cases. As I say, this is a summary of the department as a whole, but in each one of the divisions there can be more discussion, and if Senator Yee or other members would like to have more information on it, I'd be happy to provide that.
Just one question there, Mike, and that is, for instance, in the traffic fatalities and involved alcohol, what direct control does the Department of Transportation have over that particular issue?
Mr. Chair, what we try to do is look at three elements that we have some control, if not involvement with, and those are what I mentioned in the overview of the three E's. First is engineering. We're trying to engineer to be able to deal with as many concerns as we can to make things as easy to use the highways as possible. The second is education. We're trying to use awareness and information as a way to discourage and to get folks understanding the decisions and choices they make and the impacts they have on accidents. The last is enforcement, which is the third E in the continuum. I think Troy's coming up to the table now. He's actually the next presenter. I may almost transition to him shortly, but the one point I make before we do that is he has a great public information announcement, or in essence commercial, that is out that shows that a significant majority, and I kind of look at Troy here, I think it was in the neighborhood of 50% of the accidents where children are harmed in a DUI crash are where they're in the car of the driver. In other words, they're being transported by a parent or someone who has control over that child, which is, he's actually saying, 70%. So a very large percentage. And when people get that information, I think that helps sink in, and we have a major impact on being able to do something about the choices people make. That's the quick hit, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to go into a little more detail if you'd like with Troy here.
Let's see. We've got Troy coming up. Did you want to spend some more time?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to transition to Troy. Maybe would be a good point.
We have those outcomes in front of us. Senator, you have recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on your performance measure, the very last one, public transit annual rides per elderly and disabled Oregonian. So in the past, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the past 5 years, your rides per elderly Oregonian is around
3.8, 3.7, and for your year 2000, you're predicting at 7.1. So that's quite a jump. What methodology and what data do you use to have such an aggressive projection?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, it's actually a projection for year 2003, and what that projection is using is a response from the elderly and disabled community about what they consider to be a satisfactory level of minimum support from state government. So they're asking that we move as aggressively as we can to achieve that level. Now, whether we can actually achieve it within the budget, the budget that we have today, we would not achieve it. I think under the current governor's recommended budget, it's 4.5 or in that neighborhood, just short of 5 that we would achieve within the current budget. This is saying that the groups working in with this policy and with this issue are saying we feel this to be the appropriate target that should be a goal for state government. So we don't always set the goal just within the Department of Transportation.
But what I'm interested in is what data and what methodology do you use in making your projections, making your goals?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, some of the goals are done on a basis of a involvement of a community group like this one, where citizens come together and say we consider this to be a satisfactory goal for the future. So it's an opinion and judgment on the basis of that citizens group saying we think government should be able to achieve this level. That's one group. Another group where we're dealing with internally information about the engineering capability of the organization and looking at issues about how much money we have and how much we feel we can impact a particular measure. We'll make that determination maybe more on a trend line basis, saying that we've been at this level in the past, we feel an appropriate target in the future, considering the revenues we have available is to achieve this level, and that goal will be set that way. So it depends on the nature of the concern and what's happening and how much broad involvement there is and whether it's something where the public has specifically said we want to be involved through a commission or committee or other group.
Mr. Chairman, I think that when you make projections, I'd like to see more scientific projections, not based on what groups are saying. We like to have this happen, or we like to have that happen. I'd like to see you use scientific data that's available and use a realistic calculation instead of saying the goal is about twice as much as what it has been for the past 5 years. I want to see how you can reach a more realistic goal based on the funding that's given and the population increase, not just assumption.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I'll make sure that when Martin discusses the division, he gets into that. I think the bottom line is that sometimes there are outside groups, not outside groups, groups of outside citizens who are going to say, we feel and sometimes maybe we demand that a certain level be achieved, and they will come in discussing with yourselves and others why they feel like the funding level is needed in order to make it to that level. So we're trying to work as a in between to say, we hear what you're saying, here's the money we have available, we'll try to deliver as best we can within that. We're just trying to deal with citizen groups who may have a different perspective, but I'll carry back your concern.
Right. Mr. Chairman, what I would like to see is what is department's plan to reach that goal, how you're going to do it. I mean, we all like to see increase in ridership for the disabled and the senior citizens, but giving us an aggressive projection isn't enough. We want to see what your plans are to implement your goals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we'll make sure we do that. Mr. Chair, maybe this is a good time to transition to Transportation Safety Division. Then Troy Costales is the division manager for that division.
Go ahead, Troy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Troy Costales. I'm the manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I'd like to first, Mr. Chairman, respond to your question about the performance measure relating to alcohol-involved fatalities that was in the handout received. It's the second measure there. What does the department do specifically in relationship to the alcohol-related program? Quite a few things. First, we staff the governor's advisory committee on DUII, and that group has taken on the charge for us to oversee our entire impaired driving program, which is about $1.5 million a year from the Transportation Safety Division budget through federal grants and programs. That money is used to pay for law enforcement time for the Oregon State Police, for sheriff's departments, and for local city police departments. Money is used to train law enforcement on appropriate protocol for under the influence stops, as well as for drug influence stops, and they're trained for medical purposes because in some cases there have been driving under the influence of intoxicant stops that are actually somebody that's having a diabetic attack. And so what we've done is helped train some officers to understand those situations and when is it medical and when is it actually under the influence. We've put on training for judges, both for circuit court as well as for municipal and justice court, where the under the influence of intoxicant citations go to. We have trained prosecutors and the District Attorneys Association in relationship to under the influence protocol. An average, to give you a sense of what a driving under the influence of intoxicant stop involves, from the time an officer stops somebody for the potential of driving under the influence of intoxicants, that officer is locked up for 2.5 to 3 hours to work through all of the forms and process and paperwork, and that's just the arrest. That's not then the testing and then the time in front of the courts. So from ODOT Transportation Safety Division point of view, we try and work on where we can around the whole system of impaired driving and what is the area that's most needed, because the grant funds that we have are quite flexible in this area, and we can do public service announcements, as Mike mentioned, on the issue of the minors. 70% of the minors during the 1990s were in the car of the drinking driver when they were killed, and get that media message out, as well as to, in turn, support information and talk about potential legislative needs, if that's what the case is. So we do a lot of work.
Funds. Is that right? Those are federal funds.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The impaired driving program is entirely funded with federal highway safety funds.
Thank you.
I'll start in on the Transportation Safety Division, which in your book starts on page 17. This afternoon, I have a very good story to tell.
Under what tab?
The very end, I think, Senator Yee.
Oh, I might be off by two all the way through here. I apologize. I'll watch to remember I'm off by two on my printout. Safety Division, we have a very good story to tell for 1999 and 2000 in this state. In Oregon, this last 2 years, we've experienced a safety performance record not seen since 1955 and 1956. 45 years ago was the last time we had so few people killed or injured on Oregon's roads and streets. For 1999 and 2000, the Safety Division had the fortunate instance of being able to work with a lot of dedicated people around the state. I happen to work with a very dedicated set of staff who every day ask themselves the question, what have they done in their work that has had an impact on saving lives or reducing injuries in traffic crashes in this state? Our divisional budget is broken up into two main areas, operations and field services. The big number to look at here is that on field services, we push for no less than 85% of our money is in field services. In the state of Oregon, in a lot of the nonprofit situations, they can't claim that mark. And we are a state agency who push and meet that 85%. That means for every dollar that comes into the safety division, 85 cents is going directly into a program, a delivery of service somewhere in this state. Traffic safety is a major issue. Every one of us deal with transportation one way or another, as a pedestrian, as a bicyclist, as a motorcyclist, as a driver, or as an occupant. Sometime during our day, we enter into the transportation stream. And the Transportation Safety Division and the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee, governor-appointed committee, work towards putting together a program that aims at having an impact. On page 20, there's some three very high-level goals, performance measures the safety division works with. First and foremost is the number of fatalities based on the miles driven in our state. To put this in a bit of perspective, 20 years ago, you were behind the wheel of a car and drove 100 million miles in the state of Oregon. In 1980, you would have seen 4 fatalities on your trip, and you would have seen 300 people injured during your trip. 5 years ago, in that same exact trip, you would have only seen 2 people killed and only 125 people injured. Last year, on your trip around the state doing 100 million miles, you would have seen only 1 person killed and only 83 people injured. We have made big strides in this state. From 1998 until today, Oregon has the largest decline in the percentage as far as the number of people killed than any other state in the nation. To compare to some of our sister states, Idaho in 1999 saw a 5% increase in the number of people killed. California had a 2% increase in the number of people killed. Washington dropped by 4%, and Oregon dropped by 23%. That is why in 1999, our rate of 1.19 is the lowest ever. We had a 23% decline in the number of people killed in this state, the largest decline in the entire United States. One of the programs that has one of the biggest impacts is our safety belt program. Currently, we are at 88% safety belt use rate. We are one of the top 3 in the nation. And our goal in 2005 is to be at 95%. Our 2001 goal is to be at 90%. And February 8th, Oregon received this public service award from the U.S. Department of Transportation. It's the highest award they can give, recognizing Oregon for its work in occupant protection, that safety belts, child safety seats, airbags, infant car seats. They awarded us a program for our 10-year work since the safety belt law was voted in, their highest public service award that they give, and they came out here in February and conducted a press conference in Portland to make this award, and just very pleased to receive the award on behalf of Oregon and all the people that have had a part in making Oregon's safety belt use rate one of the top 3 in the nation. For alcohol-related fatalities, our goal by 2005 is to drop to 35% or 150 fatalities. Last year, that number dropped, as indicated, there down to 163 fatalities. That's the lowest we've ever had. Typically in Oregon, we are between 200 and 300 people per year killed in alcohol-related crashes. One thing to note in relationship to alcohol-related fatalities is the fact that we are now starting to approach 10% of our fatalities in the state are due to drugged driving, and that is an increase. The last 3 years, it's slowly been approaching, and it's now between 10 and 11%. Page 21 is our organizational chart. We are a very relatively small office. But a group of very dedicated employees, and we do now have for the first time a transportation safety representative in every one of the region offices as described by the Highway Division. We are the only state in the nation that has extended the Highway Safety Program out into the field and to be present and involved with the engineering side of a transportation program. Page 22. Our work is coordinated with 3 governor-appointed safety committees. One I mentioned earlier is the Driving Under the Influence of Intoxicants Committee. There is a Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety and the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee. Tomorrow and Wednesday, these committees plus special guests are meeting up at Silver Falls to start to plan our 2002 program and start looking at how much money we're expecting to get from state sources as well as from federal sources. Every year, we publish, at the beginning of the year, our performance plan which describes explicitly in each of the subject areas we're responsible for what is the expectation of the performance measure, what is the last 10 years of data that goes into the conversation of that program area to evaluate where do we want to be. And every year we go through, and this document contains exactly one half of our biennial budget. Every penny, including the money that runs operations and the money that goes towards field, is put in here and is identified by performance measures and laid out as to what subject areas are getting what funds and what programs that we're going to do. There are approximately 45 to 50 people that join in that conversation every year about this time. One of the nice things about being able to testify today is I don't have to leave the conversation early Wednesday to come back here, because it is a very crucial and critical discussion when we get ready to do our planning for the next year. With this plan, we answer the U.S. Department of Transportation's request to describe to them what are we going to spend our money on. The bottom of page 22, that last sentence, Oregon is one of only six states that receives every single federal highway safety dollar available through the U.S. Department of Transportation. One of only six. And at this point in time, for the remainder of the Federal Authorization Act, we expect to be able to receive that money all the way through and for the next 3 years that the Authorization Act exists. On administrative costs, the U.S. Department of Transportation and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration allows the Safety Division to have up to 10% administrative costs under the federal funds that we receive. In Oregon, we are less than 2%. That means that other 8% is going to program. And that's something that we're proud of, because, again, we try to reach that 85% money out to program services. We do work with those governor-appointed committees, plus there are more than 50 local traffic safety committees around the state that are citizen-based, usually county-appointed or city-appointed, and we work with them. We work with MAD, we work with SAD, work with Oregon Student Safety on the Move. And when we work with our law enforcement partners, we make sure to follow the governor's strategic approach to statewide cooperative policing, which was a budget note in the Safety Division budget for this current biennium. However, that's something that we do with every one of our law enforcement programs in all the areas of impaired driving, occupant protection, speed, and other places. For our cost controls this last few years, what we have been able to do is work with a few partners, the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and the Alliance for Community Traffic Safety, so that we can grant them one very large grant, and in turn, for instance, with the Chiefs Association, they oversee the small grants that go out to all the police departments. So from a state agency, we have oversight of one grant, and then the Chiefs Association has oversight of 100. And then they report to us at a summary level what's going on with the money, what's been the performance with the money, and how much has been spent. For us, it keeps us from coming to you and asking for more staff in order to try and comply with more and more and more federal funds that happen to be coming to Oregon over this last few years. In our operations budget program, some of the performance measures that we've been working on, which I believe is on page 25, is that we make sure we hold our planning session, which is going to take effect over the next 2 days at Silver Falls. We watch how much money we're spending. Our goal is to spend at least 90% of the federal money we receive. It wasn't too long ago that this division was only spending just over half, 55%, and we have met the goal of 90% and will continue to. In fact, last year we spent almost 95% of the federal money that we received in the state for highway safety. From our state funding, in the past it was only 65%, and we have almost reached our goal of 93% to be spent. And an annual conference bringing together all the different partners for safety. In October of 2000, we held our conference in Newport with almost 300 people. In October of next year, we will be in Bend and expect, again, almost 300 people from all different elements of the highway safety picture. Our field services program is based on the money we receive. In some cases, the money we receive is already earmarked, and we have to spend it for a specific purpose. We do receive a grant that must be used for impaired driving, so that's where it goes. We do receive a grant that must be used for child safety seats, so that's where it goes. And so sometimes our program size is related to exactly how much money we receive if there happens to be an earmark to it. We also make a big push where we can to put money in the field and to not take off that administrative money. Recently, from last session, the safety division was given responsibility for the driver education program. In that statute allows 10% of off the top of the student driver training fund for administration of the program. We are less than 1%. So 99% of the money for the driver education program in the state goes from our office directly out to the schools that are providing driver education around the state. And how we do that is by relying on some of our federal money to pay for the staff time instead of taking it out of the earmarked money that goes directly to those services. Some of the performance measures we've already talked about in relationship to fatalities and alcohol-involved fatalities and safety belts. Senator Yee will comment that we have a goal of 1.30 on the fatality rate for 2010, but we're already below that. So tomorrow, with those governor committees at Silver Falls, I'm going to be proposing to them that we change our 2010 goal to 0.99, well below the national average and well below what we were thinking 5 years ago when we set that goal. We thought 1.30 was going to be a very hard thing to achieve, and this last 2 years we've already met it. So we're going to reduce our future goal to even lower because we're doing such a good job in this state. One comment about the last bullet there, which is motorcycles. Our goal is to try and keep the number of fatalities related to motorcycles at 18. However, it's going to be rather difficult due to House Bill 2808, which has currently actually been passed from House Transportation, which repeals the motorcycle helmet law for the state of Oregon. If the motorcycle helmet law is repealed in this state, we would expect the number of fatalities in the state to go up to 45 to 50. As experienced in Arkansas and Texas and quite a few other states that have repealed their helmet laws over the past few years. On page 27, in relationship to some of the packages for the safety division, the largest one is relating to that transfer of the driver education program from the Department of Education. We came before eBoard first for a position transfer because the bill did not go through Ways and Means last session. And then later in the year, we came before Ways and Means to ask for budget authority to actually reimburse the schools. And when we came before eBoard, it was very late and after the governor's recommended budget was published. So therefore, that's why you see such a large request for a change, and that's for us to be able to reimburse the schools for driver education. In the governor's recommended budget, there is a reduction to the programs that we fund with the criminal fine and assessment account. It is money that we receive to fund two programs. First, the Think First program from the Oregon Health Sciences University, and the second program is the Trauma Nurses Talk Tough program out of Legacy Emanuel. The current recommended budget for the governor includes 1 year's worth of funds for those programs, and then they cease to be funded from that account. The bill number that is making this change is House Bill 5010 that's been proposed by the governor's office. There is a bill also related to the criminal fine and assessment account, House Bill 2877, which would extend the criminal fines and assessment account for the safety division programs for the full biennium, not just 1 year. And so we'll submit a fiscal impact on that to show the increased budget need if that bill was to pass, since the money flows through us. The Attorney General letter of advice for the Safety Division picked up on the Oregon Student Safety on the Move program, identifying that though it is legal, it is unconstitutional. So there is a bill currently in process, House Bill 3065, that will go through and delete that 50-cent charge on driver license fees that goes towards that program through the Safety Division. At the same time, there's also another bill, House Bill 3911, that is requesting funding for the Oregon Student Safety on the Move program to continue funding. However, 3911 is moving it away from the DMV fee and into a general fund request. And that 3911 is co-sponsored by Senator Trow and Representative Backlund. There are no packages of any size related to the Safety Division. There are some minor pieces in relationship to Central Services Division and their programs, which impact our assessment charges. There were three budget notes associated with the Safety Division, and the comments of those budget notes are contained there, and we've complied with all of those. Just like to close with saying that within the Department of Transportation, safety has become a priority. has been integrated throughout the department in all of its divisions. And as I opened with, we have a very good story that we can tell in the state of Oregon in that the number of fatalities and the number of injuries in our state have never been as low since 1955 and 1956. And we are all to be congratulated from the legislature, the executive branch, the judicial branch, the citizens of Oregon, those that are doing highway safety as their profession, and those that are doing highway safety as a volunteer, because it takes every one of us to make this happen. And Oregon is very high on the list nationally for people that want to come visit and find out what we're doing, because they want to duplicate it in their states as well. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I close and answer any questions relating to the safety division.
Thank you very much, Troy. One question I had, and that was with regard to the driver's license restrictions which were imposed in the 1999 session. I'm wondering if you haven't already covered it, maybe you could cover that, if you would, please, relative to what you feel may be a reduction in the number of accidents or deaths, fatalities related to the modification of the driver's licenses themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's another one of the success stories over the last 2 years that we've experienced in Oregon. In 1998, in the state of Oregon, we had 70 15 to 19-year-olds that were killed in traffic crashes in our state. And that was a 50% increase over a three-year time period leading up to 1998. That's the big high-level measure that came to bear when the conversation came around for the graduated driver licensing program for teens, 70 in 1998. In 1999, that number, I'm going to make sure I'm going to get it right for you, Alex, if you don't mind, check here real quick, that number dropped to 37 in 1999. 15 to 19-year-olds killed in traffic crashes in the state of Oregon. And last year, that number dropped to 29. We have not seen so few of teens killed in traffic crashes in this state for decades, 40 plus years. And by having a graduate licensing system that allows teens to get more time behind the wheel with fewer distractions, tying it in some cases to the driver education program, and by involving parents in the process, this legislative body in 1999 made a very good decision to move forward with this bill, because it has had a huge impact. Our early predictions when this bill was being debated last session was that we would see 10 to 12 fewer, and we saw 41 fewer, far beyond what we were expecting for that particular program.
Thank you very much. Representative Patrick, recognized.
I just had a question regarding some of your safety programs, like your motorcycle. I know your motorcycle safety. I had a question about since the inception of that program, have you tracked the amount of accidents that have occurred of those people who've taken a program versus those people who have not chosen to take the program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, the Team Oregon program is what you're referring to for motorcycle safety has only had two graduates killed in motorcycle safety crashes. And this last year, in 2000, they trained over 4,000. And the last 3 or 4 years, it's been over 3,000 each of those years. So out of the thousands of people that have been trained, there's only been two that have resulted in a motorcycle fatality. And that program is self-funded by the motorcyclists in the state of Oregon through their endorsement fee. And we do put some federal highway safety dollars in there when we can, when it is needed. But it is also one of those programs that the National Motorcycle Safety Foundation looks at and points other states to us to try and answer their questions to help them out with their motorcycle safety program as well.
Going back to the youth fatalities ages 15 through 19 in the graduated driver's license system, Troy, let me just ask this. I don't want to get too far into it, but I have had the assistance of the Department of Motor Vehicles in a bill which I'm working on to make sure that our farm youth can continue to drive during the day in a farm and ranch situation. And at this particular point, the department has gone along in good fashion on that. Do we have any statistics relative to these youth fatalities that have had a number of years of prior driving experience, such as the farm and ranch youngsters?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that bill comes back up again on Wednesday for House Transportation, and I've been working with it personally with Representative Devlin and Kelly Taylor from DMV, as well as representatives from those bodies that you mentioned. It is initially that bill was very broad, and in the debate we understood and now have a list of five particulars in to allow the passenger restriction to be removed for farm, rancher, or orchardist employees if they're a provisional license holder. When looking at the data for the last 5 years, there have been 14 crashes where there has been a teenager from the age of 13 to 17 with farm equipment. There have been 14 crashes over the past 5 years. In 11 of those cases, somebody was injured. No fatalities, but in 11 cases, there was an injury requiring someone to go to the hospital. A relatively small number. However, the cases of a brand new driver from the age of 13 to 16 that's not had driving experience before to actually be driving farm equipment doesn't occur all that often either. So we've been working with Representative Devlin and with House Transportation Committee in order to come up with an exception to the rule to allow those teens that are brand new licensed to have passengers for however many belts there are in the car to go from one place of employment to the other, not out for lunch and not after work. And I think at this point in time we are in a very workable situation that is going to allow, I believe, what you were asking for, at the same time ensure the safety of those farm employees, because what we don't want to do is say that they're any less important to us than anybody else, because they are.
Safety is certainly paramount in that regard, and I would not have gone there had I not had a sincere plea for it amongst the farm and ranch community, because the truth of the matter is that in those communities, the police officers usually will recognize those youth for exactly what they are. They're out working, and they're in between farms, and they may have other non-family members with them to keep the number of cars out of the fields as they're dropping off and picking up irrigators or sprayers or whatever to work. And so that's the reason that bill came forward, and I do appreciate you working with those folks. And when you're considering 13-year-olds driving up and down the highway, sometimes there can be problems, whether you're on a tractor or in an old pickup. So appreciate that. Are there any further questions of Mr. Costales? Senator, he is recognized.
I think we passed Senate Bill 909 last session, saying about $100 million worth of safety accident prevention measures need to be listed. Are you doing this session?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, Senate Bill 909 relates specifically to the Highway Division program. That is in part why now within the Highway Division there is a Highway Safety tab and a Highway Safety program. We presented a report to the Senate General Government and Transportation Committee earlier this session, as well as the House Transportation Committee, on this bill. The Department of Transportation far exceeds the $100 million within the highway program toward safety in a few ways. First, there is now money within the Highway Division that is being used specifically for safety construction. The reason why a project's going on in a particular spot is because of safety needs. As well as within the Highway Division, if there's a construction project going on or a pavement project going, they look at that stretch to see what do we need to do while we're here because of safety. And between those two major programs and a large percentage of the maintenance program, which is snow removal, ice removal, brush removal, slide removal, those types of things have a play in safety. The department far exceeds that $100 million as called for in Senate Bill 909 from last session.
So, follow up. So you are making this report, and could we have a copy of the report?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, you would be happy to provide you a copy of the report we've already given to the two committees. We also are continuing to work with them because they'd like to see some additional information, and if the members, by the time we get to presentation on the Highway Division, we'd expect to have a list that would be a little bit more information than even they've received to give to this committee.
I have another question, Mr. Chairman.
Please,
I want to know if prevention is part of your safety programs. For example, in the school zone speed limit, and a lot of drivers are exceeding those speed limits and causing a lot of accidents at the crossroads for students and for pedestrians. Is that part of your safety program or not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fee, it is part of our program. One of the biggest projects that we do with the local traffic safety committees, there are 50 or more of them in the state, is exactly this, working with school zones. We have what we call a mini grant program, which is $3,000 to $6,000 that we award through to the local traffic safety committees, and many of them recently have been requests that relate to school zones, things that they can put on the trunk that says your speed is and has a number. Where volunteers or parents from local schools, they'll check these out from the police department and go out at the corner prior to a school and have that up and have the radar gun in order to let people know how fast they are going in school zones. And in one particular case, the school worked with their city, and their mini grant was to pay for rubber speed bumps that were portable that they would put out at certain points in time during the day around the school in order to try and help slow traffic down. We have a program with the Department of Education that funds crossing guard materials, so they can buy that in bulk in order to be able to use new and correct equipment for crossing guards around local schools. If we can prevent a crash from happening, that's the first priority. The second priority, if a crash is going to happen, what we'd like people to do is be able to be buckled up, positioned right, children in safety seats, infants in infant seats, so that if a crash does occur, their injury is not as bad as it could have been. A lot of our programs work towards preventing those crashes, and those local school zones are part of the picture.
Mm-hmm. Another question. So you mean your grant, which has to be applied by the local school safety committee, and it will fund those flashing yellow lights and the warning signs that speed limit zone, school speed limit zone is ahead, and all those signals?
Sure. Senator Yee, we would not be able to fund the flashing signs or the school limit signs. Our funds are not, from the safety division, are not for roadway uniform traffic control device programs. They would work with whoever owns the road. If it's a city street, they would work with their public works department in order to install those. If it was a county road, they would work with the county public works. If it was a state highway, they would work with the Department of Transportation. The safety division funds don't get into the particular pieces when it comes to actual roadway environment elements. And so our grant funds would not be eligible to fund those types of signs or signals.
So what do they fund?
Chairman, Senator Yee, for school zones, we can fund the little radar reader boards that they can use on the trunks. We can fund law enforcement to be in the area to be present during to and from times for schools. We can fund the crossing guard materials. We can fund training for the school or for law enforcement or for parents about what they can do to make their school zones safer. We can help them in their conversation with their public works department if they want to put in some of the signs or signals that you're referring to. We could help them with some of the research on crashes in the area or some of the research from other places about why in some cases it makes good sense to put those types of things there by the schools.
Mm-hmm. I have another question, Mr. Chairman. With your indulgence, I have a concern about bridge safety. There is a 76-year-old bridge in my district, and recently it was closed because of an accident. Some high crane broke the bridge on the top and caused closure for about 3 weeks. and it is a very important bridge that links cities, where one city rely on the other city for emergency service or for school children to come to school in one city. So do you have any safety measures that can prevent accidents from happening? Because it's a very old bridge and it's very narrow, and a lot of wide farm equipment has to use this bridge to go from one side to the other side of the river. And my constituents said there's some high-tech measures that you can use that will cause a warning signal to go off before the vehicle approaches the bridge, which might be too high in height or too wide in width. Do you supply that kind of safety prevention, high-tech measures?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we do not have that program within the Transmission Safety Division. Mm-hmm. It would likely be between the Motor Carrier Division as well as then the bridge program that's within the Highway Division. Those two programs are on your agenda to come later as part of the department presentation. Mike might add some things.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, maybe just a little bit more on that subject. As we mentioned, we've got 2,633 bridges, and we are trying to use the funds to address all the needs within those, and we have what's called a bridge index, which goes through the various variables regarding those bridges and determines what's critical, what needs to be moved on most quickly. There was an emergency at the bridge to which the Senator is referring, and we did the work necessary to at least get it to the point of being usable, but there is an issue about the long-term full improvement involved there, as well as the issue of what can be done to warn truckers and motor carriers in general about height and weight regarding bridges. So we'd be happy to get into it in more detail when we get to the discussion of highway, but the bottom line is, Senator Yee, that in terms of the amount of money we have available now, we'll be moving through those issues within all the bridge needs, others of them correlating to the one down near Roseburg where we had to post it so that... Pardon me?
Harrisburg.
Well, I'm referring, Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, actually to the one in Roseburg, which was on I-5, actually, here about 2 weeks ago, or not even that now, about 10 days ago, where we had to actually send truckers at the common weight of 80,000 pounds on a route around I-5 because they couldn't go over that bridge. So we want to try to hit, within the funds we have, those that are most critical need, and we'd be happy to talk through what that criteria is during the highway program.
Senator Yee, we'll give you rafts. So we can have a bridge in our region. You can float your people across the river.
You can keep the raft.
I thought for sure Senator Yee was going to, when she started talking about high-tech equipment, I thought for sure she was going to come up with a bridge stretcher or something like that, that was super high-tech.
No. I understand they have some kind of radar system that can send off a warning signal before the vehicle, the problem vehicle approaches the bridge, that is either too high or too wide, and stop before it approaches the bridge.
No, the trucker is listening to Rush Limbaugh so loud he wouldn't even hear it.
I think it's worth a try.
Okay. Senator Tarnow is recognized.
This may not be your area of expertise, and you've just given a wonderful presentation on some safety things that that are great. So this maybe would come up somewhere else. But when we heard the Department of Administrative Budget earlier this session, they talked about in the risk management nine of the highest agencies with the highest amount of accidents, and ODOT was one of them. Now, is that your area of expertise, or should I ask someone else?
Mr. Chair and Senator Clarno, I do have some information on that. I'd be happy to provide the Senator. Actually, in the number of accidents, we have gone down. There are various counts, so depending on how you look at our history, where things have gone up. But we have established a risk management coordinator to deal with that subject so we can manage the subject department-wide. And I think we can show you that in certain areas we have gone down and others up, but we've put a significant focus on that and expect to be able to improve even in those areas that deal with the percentages where we've gone up.
Yeah, I just kind of wondered if a lot of them are, if I might, another question.
Certainly, Senator.
I think as I go back and forth on the weekends and the amount of snow equipment, whether it be graders or blowing snow, if a lot of the accidents are those, I see people trying to pass those vehicles and taking unsafe chances and think that, you know, maybe there ought to be a little flag out there that kind of knocks them off the road and says you can't pass. Because I see people doing very dangerous things, and I was thinking, you know, if a lot of the accidents are with those vehicles, you can see that it's not the person trying to keep the road safe and clear for the rest of us who are willing to follow behind instead of passing in crazy situations. So it would help just to know if some of those accidents aren't those kinds of things rather than just your employees out driving in a regular general-purpose car and not being careful enough. So thank you very much.
You bet. Mr. Chair, Senator, we'll have that for you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Let's see. I'm wondering if we should probably come back to Linda Gilbert and go ahead. Linda, we've bypassed your presentation, but we do have probably a good transition for the transportation safety and the budget for public transit on the Department of Transportation. Is this a good time to go ahead and phase through that so that we can have your analysis of that thing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a fine time. My presentation, for the record, Linda Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services, Budget Analysis. My presentation is on both of the divisions, so I will sandwich between the two overviews. Presentation document has been distributed. It's the gray one. We'll start on page 2. And this is the budget. This is transportation safety. A particular note here is you will see that other funds shows an increase over the legislatively approved budget of about 113%. That is caused by the phase-in of the driver safety education program that Troy mentioned earlier. That was about $4.7 million. And because that happened after the last legislative session, it looks like a great big jump. On page 3, we move to the public transit budget history, and you will be hearing from public transit next. Of note, here are a couple of things. First of all, in the general fund history, you see that it moves in 9901 from $4 million to 0103. $8.3 million. This is caused by a fund shift of $5 million from other funds to general fund, and this relates back to the failure of ballot measure 82. Had ballot measure 82 passed, this would have been an other funded expense. But there was a contingency in the bill surrounding House Bill 2082 that backfilled this with general fund in the event that ballot measure 82 would fail, and it failed. So there was a fund shift there of $5 million. The second is there's an increase in other funds that has to do with the 23% increase in other funds, and this has to do with basically an accounting change that changes a revenue transfer to a special payment. And a revenue transfer is revenue that goes away before other money is spent, so it doesn't show in the budget. A special payment does show in the budget, so this is just a matter of giving limitation to some inactivity that was already going on. It doesn't change anything. On page 4, there's a pie chart displaying these two particular divisions in the context of the $1.8 billion total budget. The two dark little wedges, so that transportation safety is about 1% of the budget, public transit about 2% of the total budget. The next page 5 shows the two divisions, transit, by fund type. Transit would be the darker wedges to the left, and transportation safety, the lighter wedges to the right. On page 6, Governor's recommended transportation safety budget is a 32.5% increase from the 9901 legislatively approved budget. It continues to implement the student driver education program. That was 1999 House Bill 2440, and that accounts for a $4.7 million increase. It continues a position established by the Emergency Board to manage increased federal funding that comes to the state. And it also transfers two positions from Central Services for clerical support. Moving to public transit, the governor's recommended budget is a 16.3% increase. It continues the senior disabled transportation program, and it shifts other funds to general fund due to ballot measure 82, as I discussed previously, and it also increases the other funds limitation by changing the cigarette tax disbursement from a revenue transfer, as I had previously discussed as well, and that's $8.6 million. The following page, page 7, simply shows the two divisions in relationship to each other with respect to their total funding. On page 8, we have the two divisions by budget category in transit. Largest portion is in special payments, a little bit of capital outlay, service supplies, personal services. Safety is on the right in the lighter color wedges, and this is basically a document for reference. On page 9, we begin the budget building process. The emergency boards that apply to these two divisions totaled about $200,000. The salary plan was $118,000, and that's combined for both divisions. And then there was a transfer of the safety education program, as we've said, from Department of Education to Transportation. Within the emergency board action, there was a kind of kickoff or get started item that was at $84,000 in one position that was to begin it. A later emergency board that occurred after April 2000 expanded that program. Current service budget level budget adjustments include the rest of the phase-in for driver safety at $4.7 million, inflation of about $1 million for the two divisions combined, revenue reduction in public transit, and this was $3.6 million, and essentially it was a reduction to get down to the correct revenue level. It balances down to unrealized revenues, or accounts for unrealized revenues in 9901, and this simply just removes that limitation from the base budget. And again, the technical adjustment of $9 million, this was changing from a revenue transfer to special payment for the cigarette tax pass-through in transit. Policy packages, essentially, there are not policy packages, they're very, very small. 147 and 149 are the two packages having to do for reallocation to bridge and preservation programs. Total for the two divisions is $7,000. 475 and 477 relate to the information system efficiencies package that is in central services, and it amounts to a reduced assessment from central services to these two divisions, and the total there is only $318. Finally, there is, it's not listed here, but there is an 090 revenue reduction package for general funds for the public transit program, and this comes out of the senior disabled program. It's $900,000, it's about 10% of that program. On the last page, we have technical adjustments. These all relate to public transit. One involves funding a fund shift of $10 million from federal as other to federal funds. The reason for that is that these funds pass directly from the federal transit to Oregon's transit division. They do not flow through the highway fund first, and therefore it's appropriate to show them expended as federal funds, not as federal as other. There was a position that was incorrectly on being paid by other funds, and it's transferred to federal funds. This is a zero sum, as was the first adjustment. And finally, the third thing we do is establish carry-forward federal funds limitation of $8.5 million for the transit area. And the reason for this is that ordering a bus and receiving a bus are two distinctly different things, and ordering it can happen anytime, and receiving seems to happen a great deal later. So the buses have been ordered, but they haven't been received yet or paid for yet. And that's why we need carry-forward limitations. And with that, Mr. Chair, I am finished with my overview. If there are questions.
Are there questions of Ms. Gilbert? furious shaking of the head no. I'm assuming that means that you absolutely understood and don't want to ask any.
I assume we have another week or two to get all the details.
Yes, Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I first want to apologize for being in and out, and so this question may have been already touched in Troy's overview. Troy, a lot of my experience with dealing with the smaller parts of ODOT comes from the time that I worked for ODOT. And my curiosity is, how do you find the relationship between the smaller, you were always lumped in with the MODE, and ODOT? Are you finding that your constituents are feeling as though they're well served by the work you're doing and that you're getting the collaborative information back and forth that you need from ODOT at this point?
Ms. Chairman. Representative Johnson.
That's your on-the-spot question of the decade, probably, with your bosses sitting all around you.
The highway safety program has never been in better shape in the state of Oregon. As I mentioned earlier in my comments, we have not seen so few fatalities and so few injuries in this state since 1955 and 1956. And the highway safety program within ODOT has permeated, and I believe our division has, if you will, infected all the other divisions of the department to look at the way safety is handled, how safety is done, in order to, and how can they, each as an individual as well as for programs, make a difference as well. The service that we receive as a division is better than what we were receiving from which was then the executive department, when safety was not part of the department. In that, from the Central Services Division, they allow changes and flexibility for what the Safety Division needs. When we were receiving services from the Executive Department, they had an accounting system, a budget system, a personnel system, and so things that related to, which was then the Oregon Transportation Safety Commission, as a standalone agency, we didn't get any help in flexing how accounts were set up in the accounting system or how the personnel process worked when we related to a federal government that was on a federal fiscal year. By being part of the Department of Transportation, the system was already set up that way. And I believe from highway safety that part of the success that we can claim for these last 2 years is from the move that was made in 1993, now finally paying off in a lot of ways 7 years later with being within the department.
Thank you. Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
At this point, do you answer directly to the director?
Ms. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes, I do. I report directly to the Director of Transportation, as well as in statute, I have delegated authority for the governor to be the governor's highway safety representative, and also indirectly report to the Oregon Transportation Safety Committee and indirectly to the Oregon Transportation Commission. So lots of people that I worry about as being the boss.
Is Dr. Tung still on your advisory committee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes, he is. And the governor has appointed him as chairman. Walt Pendergrass, former chair, retired soon after the division manager was selected 3 years ago.
I couldn't think of two more engaged constituents to have other than Dr. Tung and Mr. Prendergast. Those are two of the most aggressive advocates for traffic safety, I think, that exist in Oregon, and we should all be appreciative for their vigilance. I'm delighted by the way that you answered the questions that I asked, because at the time that I served at ODOT, those lines of communication were not always as open as they should be, and I'm delighted with your answer, and I appreciate your candor.
I'd just like to, and looking on page 23, if you look at the administrative costs in Transportation Safety Division, percentage of the total Transportation Safety Division budget, the 97-99 actuals and the 01-03 governor's recommended budget, you'll see that percentage. I don't know that we get more bang for our buck in any program I've seen when it comes down to less than 2% of this total budget goes into administration. Everything else goes to the actual program. And I think that that's a tremendous attestation as to why this particular division is extremely successful is that it appears to be very well managed, and that's why you'll have results as you get more money on the ground, it looks like to me. So I really feel very positive about the presentation. Again, thank you very much.
It might be well to have the this department just manage the lottery.
I was thinking of all of the other things that I would like to have this department manage with that kind of a modest overhead. So thank you very much, Troy. We certainly appreciate it. And then we move on to public transit. Then.
Well, Troy is doing this. We can go ahead and get started with public transit if you'd like. I just wanted to make sure if you'd like to wait or whatever you'd like.
At this late hour, why don't we just go ahead, and are there any other questions? And let's pick up with public transit as we come back tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we'll move immediately into that tomorrow. And we'll go to hearing room C tomorrow. Are we going to dedicate the whole hearing towards public testimony tomorrow?
Public testimony is scheduled tomorrow. If time allows, you can move in.
Okay. Let's plan the public testimony, and then as time permits, we'll move then into the detailed budget overview on public transportation, public transit division.
In hearing room C.
In hearing room C on the Senate side, first room over on the Senate side tomorrow. And then we'll have public testimony at that point. Any other questions or comments, members of the committee? Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and close until even time tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And even time